Welcome to Tech Chat number 43 for December 3rd, 2009. This is Michael Loff, and we're glad to have all of you here this evening. Tonight's topic, traveling, safe and secure. That's what we're talking about tonight, and we're going to cover a number of things. We're going to talk a little bit about traveling and making your way through airports, getting taxi cabs and shuttle services, some things to keep in mind when dealing with hotels and your friend there, the concierge, to kind of help you figure out where things are. And we'll talk about some useful websites. We'll mention we have at least 13 different iPhone apps. We'll talk about some things you can do to minimize theft or crime taking place against you or your belongings. And we have quite a bit of information concerning guide dog tips, things to keep in mind if you use a guide dog. Now, I do not have a dog, and so that's something to be mindful of here. And I didn't really find information at the guide dog school's websites themselves, believe it or not. But actually, I found it from another entity called the Delta Society. And so I'll be curious later to take comments from people who do have animals to see if you agree with these tips and how useful they are. So starting with link number 4 here, we'll start with a couple of useful websites. The first one is called TripIt.com, TRIPIT.com. And this is highly recommended both by Mike Calvo and Ricky Inger. And the power of this website is if you travel in business or do anything where you have a lot of different events, things going on while you travel, it basically you can consolidate all of your information, your airfares, your flight information, your hotel rooms, your conventions, any special meetings. And the great thing is it's intelligent. So you basically just send your emails, your confirmation emails to plans@tripit.com. And as long as the email address matches, then it puts it into your profile, and then you can stay on top of all of that useful information. So it's very handy, and if you have an assistant, secretary, spouse, what have you, and something changed, the meeting is canceled, or meeting's rescheduled, or something needs to be added or changed in any way, that person can update that information as well. And once you register, or if you go to iTunes Store, you can actually get an app called the TripIt Travel Organizer, I believe is the correct name of it. And then all your information will be displayed on your iPhone. So it's a very powerful resource. Mike and Ricky have now been using it for quite a while and highly recommend it. So I certainly the next time I go on a road trip, I will be trying that as well. Link number 5 is Orbitz, O-R-B-I-T-Z. And Ricky Inger asked me to make sure that I mention this one because it's used quite regularly. We look in here when we're booking events to see what best airfares we can get on the dates that we need to travel. You can get a list of the 20 most recent flights kind of in the time frame that you need to travel, so you can find out prices and different information as far as your travel itinerary, the times, prices, layovers, how long it's going to take you from point A to point B. So those are all useful things you can do right here at Orbitz, O-R-B-I-T-Z.com. Here's one that I found today called the link number 6, air travel guidelines from the Transportation Security Administration, also known as the TSA. And this specifically talks about holiday travelers. And there's a lot of different links here as well that you can look through. But it talks about some things that you can and cannot carry. And it talks about the differences of things that you can carry in the baggage that you check versus things that you cannot take on board with you. It's interesting, they talk quite a lot here about different food items. So there's a lot of food items that you might enjoy with someone for Christmas, but you're not allowed to bring them on board. So you can look through this page here at the TSA, the Transportation Security Administration, and kind of look through all these things. A lot of good documents here. There's one I didn't find overly useful, talking about specific things to keep in mind when traveling with a disabled person. It's what they call the 311 here. It talks about liquids and so forth. Packing for security, what is acceptable identification, what they call family lanes that you can use if you have family or one or two persons with disabilities. Talks about shoes and outerwear, large electronics, and that's one that I've dealt with because it's hard sometimes to know when you're going through airport security which electronics they're going to flag you for. You could certainly bet that a laptop computer or your netbook, you're just going to have to pull that computer out and and be ready to do so and put it in its own bin along with a bin for your shoes and one if you're wearing a suit coat or something like that, a coat, so that that is made available for them to inspect and make sure that you're not hiding anything underneath. But a lot of good information there. It explains the imaging technology, which has always been one of my concerns about, you know, if there's x-raying taking place, if certain items can be damaged, information on traveling with food and gifts, and just a wealth of information available there for you. Number 7 is Hotel Safety Tips for Travelers by Detective Kevin Coffey. That Coffey spelled Coffey. And Kevin has some really good tips here. He covers a lot of stuff. This is specifically for being in the hotel environment. And, of course, he's a paid professional presenter and a detective, and obviously does seminars and stuff to train either law enforcement or groups or large corporations and folks of that sort. But there's a lot of good information here. A few of the things he mentions, talking about, you know, making sure that your card is not left on the counter. If you got a laptop with you, computer bag or something, put it between your feet. That way there's no chance of someone walking off with it, as could happen if it was just sitting on your side. Or if you see a lot of hotel cards just sitting on the desk, that's a sign that they may not be overly security conscious. It talks about making sure you don't get a room over the sixth floor, higher than the sixth floor, because there are no ladders. The firemen have no ladders to get that high. So I guess if you're 7 or above, if you can't get down, you're jumping. So that was interesting. Point, something that definitely got my attention. I never really had given thought to. And then talking about knowing where your emergency exits are, certainly many things that we as blind folks are going to do anyway, and kind of getting an idea of where our room is in relation to the elevator and any exits if we have to use the stairs should there be any kind of power failure, and a wealth of other useful information that's all available here on this page. So by all means, read this material. And I'm not sure if this is the same Kevin. I know there's a book on the NLS, the National Library Service, that covers your personal safety. And it covers travel and home security and a wealth of information. Unfortunately, I cannot think of the title. I will find that and post that here. But it's a really good book, actually. It's a very good book. I would highly recommend folks reading that if you're safety conscious and concerned about such things. Okay, now, I posted all the links here, beginning with number 8. Or the links, basically the meat of this particular page, from the Delta Society concerning traveling with your guide dog. So if you're not interested in this, go ahead and press tab and jump down to number 9, which will be when we get into our social networking content. But I was really bothered and concerned that maybe I either didn't look in the right place, or just the particular 5 school websites that I went to for guide dogs, I really didn't see this, what I would consider useful information. Most of them gave some basic, very basic information if you want to attend the school and kind of what you need to bring as far as materials. And of course, a lot of them looking for donations and so forth. Understandable. I mean, they've got to keep the doors open. But I was really surprised that there was not more material along these lines. So I'm just going to mention some of these things, and later I hope one of the things that we can really go into are some of your comments for those of you who do have guide dogs, as I do not, so I cannot speak as intelligently on it. But I thought this was a pretty well and pretty thorough web page, and all resources are pasted here on this page. When traveling with your animal, it talks about be mindful of the climate, and a great example of that would be, say, you're Mike in Florida, and all of a sudden in February you have to go to headquarters in Minnesota. Well, you know, that's a very different environment there. You're talking way below zero, and you know, a dog's not going to be used to that, especially if a dog has never encountered snow and ice. So that's something to be mindful. Likewise, if you live in a cool climate and you're traveling to a very warm environment, that your dog is going to need to drink more water. And so it talks about being mindful of climate. Crowds. I know that's especially an issue when dogs are new. They have to acclimate to the crowds, or even over a period of time, that sometimes it presents issues. People take their dogs to conventions and other things and are just not used to that. You know, working a dog and walking down the street is very different from a very, very crowded environment where the dog has to anticipate what a lot of different people may do and how they may move. And it's a little bit more than just navigating and traversing the room itself, but the myriad of people. Talks about noises. Certainly dogs, just like people, are affected by different noises, and something to be mindful of. Also talks about a very important thing, and that being other animals. Now, this came up in our recent podcast. Someone talked about that, and they were particularly concerned, I guess, about attacks from other animals. And obviously, this is a real issue. And I, again, can't speak very intelligently on it other than to say that it's something to be mindful of when you're traveling. And again, keep in mind these tips are also talking about not only traveling within the U.S., but also traveling to other countries. So we want to be mindful of other animals that the dogs may encounter. It also talks about being aware of the laws in the places where you're going, because there may be specific leash laws or muzzle laws, or sometimes you may need some assistance and want or expect a hotel or other personnel to assist you, but it is ultimately your right and responsibility to take care of your animal, and they may be prohibited for health or safety concerns from assisting in that way. Talks about having 3 copies of all necessary documentation. And again, I think here we're talking about your veterinary records, your vaccination history. I guess there's licensing, which I didn't know. I didn't realize your dog actually had a license number. So I learned a lot today doing this stuff. But again, having 1 copy of this documentation with you on your person at all times in your bag or what have you, having 1 at the location where you're staying, and having a 3rd copy at home or with someone that the information can be faxed to you should that be necessary. And I really assume here they're talking more for international travel, but just good practices certainly to get into. Talks about having current records, as we mentioned, of your vaccination history, and in case there are any incidents that come up. Talks about, this is a good one because this is always something I was concerned about, a plan B in case your dog can't work during the trip for any reason. So I know my my basic thought there is, well, even if I have a dog, I'm always going to take my cane, because you never know. I mean, your dog could be hurt. You and your dog could be separated. I would hope that wouldn't be common, but apparently it happens. It was mentioned here. So it talks about always having a list of important phone numbers. And I would say whether you have a dog or not, that's just a good idea when you travel to have contact numbers for all of the places that you're going to be staying and interacting with, your hotels, convention centers, and the airports, the airlines, taxi, shuttle services, and things of that sort. It talks about talking with your vet and learning of any potential diseases or parasites that the dog could be exposed to in the area that you're going. It talks about being mindful of time zones and if you need to alter the feeding or relief times in the schedule for your animal. Likewise, if you were in Florida and traveling to California, that's 3 hours different, and that's certainly enough to not only affect us as humans, but affect our animals as well, and to be mindful of that. How long to withhold food or water either before traveling or during traveling to try to minimize the dog's need to relieve him or herself so that that can properly be scheduled. So I'd be very curious to hear comments on that as we go further here. Have an adequate amount of medication and a copy of your prescription should it need to be refilled, or should the medications the dog needs be lost or anything. And if you need to change or alter your scheduled doses for any reason while you're traveling. It talks about the safety of the water supply, so that's something to be mindful of. And should you feed your dog or give your dog bottled water, as maybe the local water supply in Mexico or maybe somewhere else might bother their stomach and give them issue. Talks about recognizing and treating motion and altitude type sickness. And I'll be curious to hear any comments on that, if that's ever been an issue for you and how you deal with that. Talks about asking your veterinarian for a referral of a vet that they might use at the destination where you're going to. It talks about doing a lot of things in advance to help get your dog acclimated to the travel procedure, so it's not they're not going out there cold turkey. Things like teaching the dog how to be handled by a stranger. A great example would be, say, airport security. And talks about using elevators or escalators or lifts or vehicles. And I know that's kind of a touchy area. Some people just are vehemently against taking their dogs on escalators, but there certainly might be times that you need to work with that. And so I'll be curious your thoughts on that. It talks about unique situations where the dog can't relieve in the typical way that he or she is used to. Maybe they're used to grass, but all you have to work with is concrete, or maybe you're in a situation where the animal can only relieve themselves, but it has to be done so indoors. So it talks about taking some newspapers or even a super absorbent diaper along with plastic bags that can be put underneath just in case things seep through, or even more importantly, then the bags might be used afterward to dispose of their messes. Talks about carrying written detailed descriptions of your dog, including having 2 photos. A description might include things like the dog's age, its weight, its height, any special markings, any tattoos, if it carries an embedded chip in it, and the license number. And it talks about having 2 photos, and it goes into greater detail about how those photos maybe should be taken to help give someone a better idea of your dog's physique. Find areas where your dog can exercise or play, but you want to be careful that there's nothing there to harm the dog, like broken glass or even spoiled food. So that's something very important I hadn't thought of. But allow time to walk and exercise with your dog prior to your travels, and provide adequate rest periods for your dog, you know, while they're on duty or before going on duty. So, you know, you got an extra person or an extra, you know, your animal. You have to think about their needs as well as you go into a travel situation. It's stressful enough probably for yourself as you're altering your events and trying to stay on top of what's around you and absorb all the information that's coming your way. And finally, here talks about the dog suitcase, what kind of things you're going to take along, supplies for your dog in addition to what you take along for yourself. Talks about dog bowls, stating that in a pinch, you can use one bowl for both food and water if necessary. It talks about different kinds of bowls, or metal, plastic, lidded, collapsible, or maybe your friend the disposable bowls that you can pitch when you're done. Talks about purchasing dog food when you reach your destination to save on space, or if you are going to take some, certainly packaging it in single portions in the plastic bags, so that after the food is eaten, the plastic bags can be used to get rid of the dog's excrements. Talks about if you're going to feed them canned food, certainly don't forget the can opener. Yes, very good thing there. One or two toys, but make sure it's not a noisy toy, something like a noisemaker, a squeaky toy or something. Try to avoid those so you're not disturbing others. Talks about having some of their favorite treats and, of course, grooming items, brush, clippers, comb, shampoo, leashes, backpack, and those good old reliable plastic bags and a few other things. I know it talked about, I guess some people have rain coats and booties and things for their dog to protect their feet. I would think that'd be pretty important in the very cold weather, I would think. But that's just a few things there. And again, I didn't link to this page, or I didn't take you to the page, but it is there, link number 8 for the Delta Society, a great resource for those interested in proper treatment and care of animals. Okay, links 9 through 21 are a total 13 links, and they specifically deal with useful applications for your iPhone. I'm not going to click on them. Keep in mind, if you do click on these, they're automatically going to take you to the iTunes store, so you only want to do that if you want to look and read further about the app or maybe even purchase it. Some of these are free. Some of them have some fees to them. All of them are pretty low cost. The only one that has a little bit of cost is the mobile navigator. So we'll talk about these 13 apps here. Number 9 is Around Me. This is one of my favorites. It shows businesses around you, and they're sorted by category. So you want to look for restaurants, you want to look for hotels or taxi services. Maybe you just need to find a grocery store to get some dog food or some extra supplies for yourself, grooming supplies, what have you. Around Me is a great app. It's a must-have. Here's one that I've downloaded, haven't really played with yet, but it came pretty highly rated. It's called Hotel Pal, and this basically lets you look at all hotels in a given area to mark it, and you can even make reservations, so you can look through and find out the costs and their geographic relationship to other things, such as where you might be staying. Now, the only item here that has some cost to it is item number 11, and for anyone who may have heard about this, this is the Mobile Navigator. It's a software called Navigon. They did have a special through November 30th for $69, so I'm not sure now if it went back up to $89 or $99, or if you can still get that deal for $69, but this is a GPS solution. It does take a little while to install on your iPhone because it has the maps built into it, so it's about 1.3 gigabytes. And they just submitted a new version to the App Store to improve further the pedestrian travel. So very excited about that. Again, this is an application that's for the mainstream, and the company's been very diligent and aggressive about making it accessible for blind persons as well. And, of course, the benefit is the reduced, or should I say affordable, or mainstream cost that goes with it. So we're not paying hundreds of dollars. Again, it's anywhere from $69 to $99. You can grab this application. Number 12 is called Unibus iBus Universal, and this is for looking up cities, their bus schedules, and finding out the routes and so forth. Apparently, it uses Google Maps, so Google supplies the data on this, but it is an iPhone application, and you can use that and find out. Some feel the app's a little cumbersome or just a little different to kind of navigate, but it's certainly doable once you take the time and play with it. And I find that's for those of us who don't drive and need to use public transportation, very, very useful service there. Item 13 is called Voice Compass, and this is one that I like. especially when traveling through things like parking lots or grassy areas, because what it does is tells you down to the degree in what direction you're traveling. So it's great if you just need to know north, south, northeast, southeast, southwest, what have you, but it tells you down to the degree. So again, that's very useful if you're wondering if by chance you're veering or if the street's veering and you need to follow a designated path, but there aren't real landmarks to do that. And I can think of quite a few parking lots and other things, you know, gas stations and just some different entities. So that app is very useful. Number 14 is Flight Update, and this helps you keep track of things like gate changes, postponements, and other useful information. I think it's like $4.99 or something. It does have a little bit of cost to it, but if you do travel by air, it is a handy, seems to be one of the best apps for that, just to stay on top of what, you know, if you just want to find out what options are available when traveling from one city to another, which airlines have flights doing that, and where your layovers may be, and the differences in cost. Number 15 is Urban Spoon, which shows you local restaurants, because we all likes to eat, and a lot of this would be in Around Me, but I think this may have a few that Around Me does not, because that's what it focuses on. It focuses on restaurants, and you can choose different categories, like Italian, Mexican, you know, pizza places, you know, coffee shops, whatever you're into, whatever you're in the mood for, you can do that with this, and it tells you the address, tells you its distance from you, and you can even click on and call the place if you want to ask them some specific questions and maybe find out they're priced out of your range or that you have to do reservations and they're booked, you know, whatever. So you can do all that with Urban Spoon. Great application. Number 16, kind of these items kind of cross over a little bit here, because what I want to talk about is a lot of people, when they, if you're going to, say, a convention for the blind or maybe work-related material, CSUN, ATIA, or something where there's a lot of other people, or your own company, a business convention, you want to know what other people are doing. And one way to do that is to use what are called hashtags. And so they agree on a particular term, number sign convention 2009 or whatever. And that way, any time that someone posts what they're doing at that convention, they put that tag in, and all you have to do is search for that tag and follow it. And that way you can basically read posts from other people who are attending that event, and they're talking about things that they find of interest, either great presentations or great company exhibits to check out, or boring presentations that you shouldn't bother with, maybe the great restaurants that people have found, or, you know, maybe the place where that evening a lot of people are going to have drinks and socialize, because, you know, a big part of these conventions is kind of the social interaction, and just it's not what you do in the event sometimes, it's the meetings and the handshakes and the things that you do in the evening as well. And so a few apps that assist with that, kind of one of my favorite for the iPhone is called Twitterlator Pro. But if you don't want to spend any money, there's another one called Tweetero. That's there for you. Item number 17. 18 is called Voice Tweety, and this is for sending audio tweets. So maybe if you want to give kind of audio reviews or talk about things happening at a specific event, you can use Voice Tweety and do that. Likewise, number 19 is called TwitVid, and you can actually send videos of an event. So if you kind of want to be go around and do some interviews or just kind of give your observations of an event, maybe you want to share them with colleagues or just other people who can't be there but would like to know what's going on, you can do that with those two applications. Number 20 is the Facebook application, which gives, in a lot of ways, much greater accessibility on the iPhone than people have even navigating through the Windows interface. And item number 21 is an application called NimBuzz. So this is an application that basically lets you interface with a lot of different instant messaging clients, but also lets you interface with Skype. So the numpad on it, as last check, is not accessible. However, as long as you have your Skype contacts and everyone added as a contact, you can see your list of contacts and make Skype calls. So sometimes that's handy when you're out and about to call people that you regularly communicate with on Skype. Now, extending on that and going down here to using Twitter to keep up, these are some links that we've provided before in the past. I have added a couple of though. And so again, if you have been thinking about getting on the Twitter bandwagon, or you see that your colleagues, or to stay on top of what you're interested in your particular industry or education, or your line of work, what have you, you know, you can use many of these clients here. And again, we go through all of these here. First three links here, 22 through 24, being social networking software for Windows, particularly Twitter applications. Number 22 is Quitter. Number 23 is McTwit from Jamal Mazrui. And number 24 is TW Inbox for those of you who live and breathe by Outlook. It's an interface to integrate Twitter into that. And of course, again, number 25, the application for Macintosh users, Syrinx, S-Y-R-I-N-X. Number 26 is Twikini, has a low cost to it, I think $4.99 for the Windows mobile platform. And one I know I did not include the last time was number 27 for those using Symbian phones, an application called TweetS60. And that app is free. So there's some things you can definitely keep in mind as you go about here. And we can cover some other things here. But before we do that, I want to see what kind of questions you have. And first, we'll take text questions. And then we will open up for voice chat. So as far as the guide dog, let's save that for the voice chat. Since I do not own one, I'm not going to be the most knowledgeable in that area. But so first, let's enable questions. And again, now you can type in your question and submit it, and they will come to me, and then we can address those. And then in a few minutes, we will open up the voice chat here for you this evening. And again, we always welcome your suggestions, be they for show ideas or just things that weren't covered that you feel are good links and resources, things that we should add. We can always do that. So send your comments and suggestions to resources@serotalk.com or call us toll free 866-202-0520. First question, Kyle, what is a Symbian phone? Symbian is an operating system technology. So a lot of your Nokia phones and things of that sort use Symbian. As this, you have Windows Mobile, and then you have Symbian, and then you have, of course, the iPhone. Of course, now you have Google Android. So Symbian is just a technology used for a lot of phones. And a lot of people feel that it's more stable than Windows Mobile, and it's what I was using until the iPhone came along, and now I'm an iPhone junkie. So we'll see if we got any more questions there. And in the meantime, we will... Okay, I think we have a question here. Okay, Jeffrey Bennett says, tip the agent and you'll get better ground service if you're at the airport. So very good suggestion. That's certainly always something you want to do and possible. You know, tip folks as they assist you, whether it's someone's assisting you and taking your bags to your room in the hotel or getting help through the airport. I wonder if that's more so in New York. It doesn't seem to make as big a difference in the Midwest, but we's the kind of nice folks here. But it's certainly a nice courtesy to tip people who are assisting you.
Hey, Mike, it's Mike. Just another application I wanted to mention for knowing what's around you is PowerSearch, and it's made by Wayfinder, so it uses the same data that Wayfinder Access uses, the TelAtlas maps. So that's another app. It's called PowerSearch, and it's made by Wayfinder, and it's similar to Around Me. I think some of the stuff is different on it, but it does use the same TelAtlas maps that Wayfinder Access on the Symbian phones use, and it's fully accessible.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Mike, for that application. We'll make sure that PowerSearch is added, and that's done by the folks of Wayfinder. So very good information to know there. So let's see. I guess we can try to take some questions. And in my short-term memory, let me enable live voice chat. And again, press F9. And again, just first state your name, and then we can call on you in turn or just state the subject of what you want to cover. And I'm particularly interested in the following things. If you have any comments on traveling with a guide dog, if you have any questions about either hotel travel or just some of the things that you learned through doing travel yourself, we'd certainly like to hear that information. So again, okay, here's someone attempting to speak. So again, just state your name. Again, it's F9 is a push to talk, meaning you press F9, you're transmitting, and you let go and you're done. It's just like a radio or a CB radio or what have you. It's the way it works. Okay, so you just press F9, state your name, and we'll be glad to call on you. Right, here's someone attempting to, but you got to talk. So we're also looking for some good topics. Okay, Wallace, your question tonight, sir.
Michael, I basically have a comment with regard to CNI dogs. And my comment is, you mentioned about the dog food, feeding them dog food. A lot of times when you go on a trip, if you will basically feed your animal dry dog food, it will eliminate a lot of possible problems.
Okay, that's a good tip. They didn't mention that. I know when I had a cat, I always fed it dry food, and that seemed to work out well. And the vet said it was really good for their teeth, so that's good if the same applies to dogs. So thank you, Wallace, for that great suggestion.
Mike, this is Steve from Independent Living Agency.
Okay. Yes, Steve at ILA. What's up, guy? What's on your mind tonight?
As a former guide dog user and traveled many, many places with a guide dog, as I'm sure most of the people in this room have, it's also important, and different guide dog schools will have different accessories that you can purchase via guide dogs. You were mentioning about raincoat and booties and such during the winter months and stuff, but what's important primarily is to, and the Guide Dog Foundation in Smithtown sold an accessory which was a water bottle that was housed inside like a little casing or like a dish. So you could fill that bottle of water bottle full of water before you left home. And you needed to give your dog water while he was on the plane. You can give him a little water to wet his palate. And sometimes when you go to different locations, the water is not exactly the same as it is in your home. So it could lead potentially to some your dog's stomach being upset. So taking that bottle of water from home could potentially save you a lot of aggravation and frustration in the long term.
Okay, great idea. Peter Bosley having trouble with the audio, so I don't know if anyone else is. As far as I know, everyone, it's hard to who is hearing things and who is not. Terry, okay, hold on just a moment. Sir, I want to acknowledge Steve's comments there. So, okay, yeah, having a designated water bottle, that's right, a good idea, because certainly if you went to a place that had bad water and then you buy bottled water, it may be right from the tap anyway. So, yeah, I think that's a good idea. And I noticed that a lot of these, you know, schools have different supplies that they recommend that go with their animal. I know there's different tagging involved and making sure what's going on there. Okay, thank you. Kyle says the audio's working, so I'm sorry, Peter. I'm not sure what your particular issue is. Terry, you have a question tonight, sir.
Yes, I was just going to comment on the food portions. Certainly separate little baggies, but perhaps don't give them a full complement until you're settled, but enough to keep the hunger pangs away and you know, keep the familiar routine going for the dog. That's my comment. Thanks.
Well, I think that's what it was addressing here, and I'm curious your comments could have talked about how much you would feed before or during the travel. So obviously that's when you want to be go light and give them the absolute minimum of food and water. So what would your suggestions there be? Is there a certain amount of time that you make sure that they get food and liquid before you actually take off, and then say you're en route for 6 hours? How would you deal with that situation?
Yeah, I mean, certainly you would not feed them a few hours or maybe 12 hours before if you're going to fly in a plane in a long distance. When you get settled, you can feed them the small complement until they get, you know, acclimated with the right timing, and you can look for, additional sources of their food. Sometimes you don't want to switch brands on a dog all of a sudden, and that's a reason why one should check in advance for their brand of food, because you don't want to change the makeup of the dog food, because some of them are corn-based, some of them are wheat-based, and some of them are special diets, and, you know, you got to take all that into consideration, too.
Very good point. If you travel, you might not be able to find the particular food that your dog is used to. So that's a great idea. Now, how much, for those of us who don't have animals, let's just say I'm going to be gone for a week, how much of these baggies, how much would I put in? What's the typical amount that a dog's going to consume? I'm trying to get an idea. Is this really going to weigh me down if I have 7 days or maybe 5 days of prepackaged dog snacks for them? What can I expect is going to add to my load? Yes, Steve.
Just to add on to what Terry's saying in answering your question, sometimes you need to make that sacrifice in carrying that 7 days of food. When I traveled with my guide dogs, basically what Terry was saying is I would feed my dog late at night before we went to bed, and we, hold on.
Hey, we can hear your computers wigging out on you there, I guess, but well, very interesting. Some good thoughts. So when you get back here, Steve, you can address that. But also, I'm curious, you said when you had a dog, I'm guessing you gave up on the dog. And I'm curious to hear from people who actually had an animal and then decided not to anymore. Okay, go ahead. Go with your comments.
I would feed my guide dog. And I retired my last guide dog, my third guide dog, passed on earlier this summer. And I haven't used a guide dog in about 2 years. Since moving to Minnesota from New York and I'm working from home, I feel there's less of a need for me to use a guide dog now here. Because I'm working from home, and I feel that the guide dog personally would probably get better treatment, a better working experiences with someone who actually could use it. I don't feel that I could guide dog effectively, but essentially I would feed my guide dogs late at night prior to traveling, and I was always willing to travel early in the morning. I would get a 6 o'clock flight, and by the time I got to where I was getting, hopefully not being a 5-hour flight, the dog would be starting to chomp at the bit. I would have given him some water during the flight and stuff, but as soon as I got to the hotel, as Terry pointed pointed out. I would feed the dog his normal morning meal and then get him back onto the schedule. But and it didn't cause me any aggravation. Sometimes, like I said before, you need to pack for the 7 days. And yes, it's going to be adding to your luggage. But just think, when you're coming home, you have that less much luggage.
Right, and that gives you room to maybe, you know, pick up a few items to bring home. So kind of balances out there. So that's a really good idea. Appreciate those insights. Very okay, go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, just finally, make a separate valise for the dog, a soft bag that is small, you know, small relatively, so it's not so cumbersome. But then it's designated for the dog. Put all the dog stuff all together in one place. And I don't know if that was mentioned or not.
Well, yeah, I guess that's what they meant by the dog suitcase, meaning some kind of container that had everything for the dog in that one area. What I assume they meant by that. But I'm curious about, because it was talking in here about when traveling in the air, and if any of you ever had to deal with issues of your dog becoming sick, either maybe it was ill before you took off and didn't know it, or it was really, he or she was really affected by turbulence, you know, in the air, or air pressure changes or what have you. And I know someone who recently had to deal with a sick dog, and I guess it threw up in the airport. Fortunately, nothing on the plane, but I'm curious if any of you have dealt with issues like that, or if that's even addressed in your training at your various guide dog schools. Does anyone have a comment on that? Go ahead, Wallace.
Thank you, Mike. Yes, I got my first CNI dog in 1968. The dog got sick during training. I brought him home, and he got sick virtually. I was a trained piano tuner, and he virtually got sick in every cab in the city. Coming home with him the first time, he got sick in the limousine, and and I had to eventually, you know, take him back, and I got another dog. But some CNI schools, as bad as it sounds, they'll, if they think they can, they'll, you know, give you a dog that has a tendency to get car sick, because, you know, it happened to me, and that's all I have to say right now.
Okay, well, very good. I appreciate that. I just wondered, you know, if that's an issue with the limo company, or, you know, a train or bus or airplane can actually then come back and charge you for cleaning up any messes that your animal has made. I talked about that a little bit in this article, which is what made me think to bring that up.
Can I chime on that?
But okay, go ahead, Steve.
So just quickly, I just want to say, you know, I think being now a cane user, and being a cane user prior to a guide dog, for all the benefits, and my first guide dog always had car sick as well, but I eventually, with positive reinforcement, was able to provide him the opportunity that he felt comfortable in a car, so he stopped getting car sick. But I think for the good that the guide dog do, or the seeing eyes dog do, you certainly sometimes have to grin and bear it, as sometimes you might have a child that might get car sick or whatever, and can't necessarily return the child. But I mean, guide dog is the good outweighs the bad most of the time.
Well, that's a good point. And what are your thoughts? Do you still travel any for your work? I'm just curious how things have changed. I mean, I'm intrigued by it, because I know some people who specifically said they... Oh, go ahead with your thoughts there.
I think, for the most part, building on what other people have said in this chat via text or voice message, I still travel and I still maintain the same type of routine with or without a guide dog. With a cane, I have to ask for more assistance, which I'm okay with. Previously, I wasn't. I tried to do everything on my own, but I had to start realizing my limitation. But I think, for the most part, overall, with traveling for work and things of that nature, I think if you go into a situation as well-informed as you possibly can and do all your research prior and set yourself a routine and a guide as to how you're going to do things and how you're going to go and educate. Whether you're traveling with a guide dog or a cane, you're going to be successful. If you are there looking to pick a fight with someone, and trust me, I have before, if you go into a situation trying to educate people and help people learn how to do things the proper way, whether it be with Homeland Security or the flight attendants or the assistance to and from baggage claim and such, I think if you come across as being a more positive person and pleasant without having a sharp tongue, you'll gain a lot more. Jeff made a statement before about tipping the baggage handler while beginning your baggage. And that, as you elaborated on, with anything in any place you go, if you appreciate someone by giving them a duty, they will in turn give you probably a lot more respect than what they probably would have looked at anyone else.
Now, do any of you feel that your dog, or you and your dog, have been needlessly or harassed a little bit more than you should? Either that the airport security was rough with the dog, or either denied taxi service, or just had some issue while traveling where you were inconvenienced because your dog was there? I guess if I don't hear anything, I guess that's a good sign. Okay, I hear two people, but I'll start with Terry. Go ahead, sir.
Well, my experience was pretty positive. Although my third guide dog, I currently don't use one for similar reasons that, you know, other people spoke to. My dog actually got sick, like diarrhea, because they saw a plane. Evidently, this dog wasn't very acclimated to airport situations, and so we were pretty incredulous about putting the dog on board. But even if we were picking people up from the airport, and I happened to take my dog, because, you know, airports are large areas, the same thing has happened. So I don't know. It kind of puzzled me about that aspect of the dog.
Yeah, I think someone else had a comment, I believe. Steve. Okay, go ahead, Steve.
You know, the state, I don't know how much more, how true it is now, but working in New York City for less than a year, there were cabs that literally, when you went out to get a cab and went to get into the car, they would say, no guide dogs, no guide dog. And there were so many cabs that passed me by refusing to take the guide dog, they wouldn't even stop. I had one incident which now defunct TWA. The flight attendant said, well, we're going to have to get a cargo case for your dog. He has to go into cargo. He's a guide dog. She said, it doesn't matter. And I said, well, maybe you haven't been through your training, you know, but he's a service animal. He's entitled to be, to go anywhere open to the public and go and come with me on air in an airport. I'm saying an airplane. And it delayed plane, unfortunately, but that's when it wasn't such a bad situation about delaying planes. But she had to get re-educated by her supervisor. You know, unfortunately, there is still ignorance. But again, elaborating on what I said before, if you try to make a situation as positive, try to work with the person and educate them. It's unfortunate we have to do a lot of education. Some people say, well, why do I have to do that? Why shouldn't they already know? Everyone should have the highest level of sensitivity training to address every situation that they're going to possibly deal with. However, training can only take so much. There can only be so much training. You know, there are ignorant people out there, but if you try to treat people with kindness, they'll be better off.
Okay, Kyle points out that airport security, because of his dog, made him miss his flight, and this happened about 3 years ago. Thank you, Kyle, for sharing that experience. Moving on to maybe some different areas, just curious if any of you want to share anything that you learned while traveling, maybe something that you didn't know, you just didn't anticipate, kind of caught you off guard when you, maybe a valuable lesson you learned, whether it was navigating your hotel or just something about taxis and shuttle services. I didn't really address it, but a lot of times some people are just conditioned to just grab a taxi, but a lot of times there are shuttle services that go from airports to the major hotels and stuff. So a lot of times you can save money by looking for some of these, I don't want to say third party, but shuttle services or other means of transit that can get you to point from point A to point B. So I'm just curious, so if anyone has any comments on just something you learned that you didn't know and you kind of learned the hard way through the life of hard knocks that you want to share with others about traveling and something to keep in mind. Well, again, hearing nothing, that's a good sign. If all of us have done really well there, that's a very good thing. Let's see if we have any final comments here before we end for this evening. I should have prepared a little bit more time, perhaps, or maybe I could show some iPhone apps if you're interested. But did someone key up there? Someone have a comment about something?
Yeah, Mike. Hey. Jeffrey. Jeff Pettit here.
Okay, you're Tom and Jeff, so I'm going to start with Tom, and then I'll come to you, Jeff. Tom, what's your comments tonight, sir?
It definitely pays to shop around in finding those third-party apps. Found that some are a little bit more accommodating than others. A lot of times you're not going to be able to find them in your smaller markets where I've traveled. Bigger cities have more options than, say, a city of 50, 60,000.
Well, yeah, it's like when I came down to the convention and I went out to the other airport and didn't realize I was at least 45, you know, almost an hour away from Orlando. And thought, oh, man, this is going to cost me a boatload. But then found a shuttle service to get from Sanford over to Orlando. So it is good to shop around. Jeff, your comments tonight, sir.
Yeah, one thing I would say, Mike, is if you're going to be staying at a hotel, I try to avoid eating at the hotel itself if possible, because it's much more expensive to eat at the hotel. It's probably easier if you can find a place that's near the hotel. It's a little bit cheaper than having to eat at the hotel, because they know they've got a captive audience and they charge more for the food.
Yeah, and one thing my friend told me is two things you can go ask people at the hotel desk. First, you say, what are the good places to eat? Okay, and then, of course, their original answer is going to be the common ones, you know, the ones that they're just used to giving to people. And then you let them tell you the three or four places, and you go, okay, now let me ask you, where would you go to eat? And then you'll find out the really good restaurants. And it works. My friend Paul Cooper gave me that bit of advice. Yes, Steve.
I may have missed this thread because my kids were running in and out. But another wise tip when someone goes to a hotel, those who are total, who have extreme low vision, is something that I've used regularly, is if you get a key card for your lock, for your door, have the hotel representative or clerk or hotel desk for a clerk, have them put a piece of tape on the opposite side of the card that does not go into the lock. So you can distinguish which is the right side of the clock, card, I should say. I think we've all been there at some point, but we had to try, well, it's one out of four possibility that I'm going to get this key card right into the lock. And unfortunately, they demagnetize so quickly, you could be stuck up there saying, well, what do I do now? You know, but putting a piece of tape on the opposite side of the card that goes into the lock, to the key slot, is a helpful tip.
Right, opposite ends, same, excuse me, the, right, same side up or what have you, but on the opposite end, the end facing you, and that way, or I guess if they tell you it's on the bottom side, as long as you have a system and you know, that's a very good suggestion. I'm glad you mentioned that. They were really good at the conventions last year about doing that. And I asked, or I guess even before I realized it, I never even thought about asking the hotel clerks to do that. I used to just go in and figure out which one of the four ways it went and made my own little label for it. So, but that's a really good idea.
Some hotels,
and you certainly
also
have the right to ask for that.
Some hotels are also putting staples in the car, also, which is helpful too. If you have a bad staple, cut finger, white tape.
Yeah, staples, that just seems like a bad idea. And of course, the tape, you know, they can just remove it and, you know, reauthorize the card. But that was a good thing that I talked about, is making sure, you know, and when you're traveling, let me just mention a few other things in our remaining time here. Always pay with a credit card. That way, if it's stolen or gets abused at a restaurant or a hotel or some other entity, you are protected against that. Whereas if it comes out of your debit account, you have protection, but it has to be caught within the first 48 hours. So you may not think to do that. It's always best to use a credit card and maybe have, just in case that card becomes compromised or it gets disabled because you're doing a lot of transactions in an area that you don't normally do business in and they actually shut it down on you. So you have a second method to make payments as well. Question, Kyle asks, will they charge you? No, I've never seen anyone charge to put tape on your card. So that's kind of the good thing there. And the big thing is making sure that you're not leaving your, you know, laptop and your computer things unattended, and making sure that you got a good layout of your room and you know where things are, and checking the phone and make sure it works just in case you should have some kind of emergency where you need it, and knowing where your exits are and elevators, and just kind of checking things out, and ice machines or whatever you need, just so you kind of know your surroundings. So again, if you have some person with the hotel either to assist you with that, that's good. Ask them questions, ask them where the restaurants are. So if you need to grab a quick breakfast, some of these places do have free, you know, maybe coffee and donuts or something like that. So if you don't mind a light breakfast, you don't need a big breakfast, you can get some of those provided as hospitality with the hotels. But Jeff makes a good point that you do want to find places outside. Now, sometimes hotels are a little more, that may not be an option. Of course, you also want to be mindful of your neighborhoods and so forth. So when at all possible, travel in groups, if that's an option. And of course, there's places online you can check if you're concerned when you're choosing a hotel to make sure that it's not in a really exorbitantly high crime area. Was that Steve?
It's Terry. If you're planning international travel or any long trip, you know, you want to hop several planes in order to get to your destination. Do not, you know, in order to save money, even if it's $200 or $300 like an international trip, we found that it was just compounding everything. All the things that you mentioned above is just magnified after that, and we will never ever do a triple hop flight like that.
Well, and of course, I'm always concerned about, you know, what if you're going to Australia? You might have an 18, 19 hour flight or something crazy. I don't know how you're going to keep your dog under wraps that long. But let me see what the question here is.
Mike,
Jeffrey Bennett asks
about hotels too. If you're going to be in a hotel and you use the television set, make sure you know what you're doing, because you might get charged for a movie or charged for something that you don't want to pay for.
Okay, just in case anyone didn't hear that message, hold on just a second, Tom. Just in case, maybe that's what Peter was referring to, the questions that people were submitting weren't coming through. Jeffrey points out to be careful when using the TV, or you could be charged for services. You might end up buying you a couple HBO movies or something. So, get some orientation to the television set if you wish to use it. Yes, Tom, your comment, sir.
Yeah, I do a lot of youth conferences and take students and such, and first thing I do in regards to the TV is I disable the movies, not only for my benefit, but to keep the kids out of mischief, so to speak.
Okay, well, that's a good idea. And, of course, a lot of these, you know, we have to be mindful. These are going to be those of us traveling and pretty much almost on our own as we travel. And so we really have to hone in on our bearings there to kind of know what's around us. And there's a certain level of trust that comes into play and, you know, asking the right questions. And it's a learning experience like anything else that we do. But we can travel safely, and there's no reason that if people are afraid of it, that they can overcome their fears and go out and travel and enjoy sights and other events just like our sighted counterparts do. So with that, we're going to put the wraps on it. We thank all of you for your great comments and input and ideas tonight. Join us again next Thursday, December 10th, as we roll on to Tech Chat numero 44. I'm hoping the KNFB e-reader will be coming out soon. That's why I've been a little reluctant to give dates, because I want to promote that as soon as it comes out. But we shall see. Anyway, we will have events on the 10th and 17th, definitely. And then we'll see if we're going to do anything on New Year's Eve. But anyway, so until we meet again next week, let's stay connected and stay directed.